Okay. So, session three, that was the wake-up call for me.
Yeah, in what way?
I realized my planning and my listening skills, you know, the stuff we focused on in session two, they're fine.
Right.
But the moment I actually open my mouth, I'm pretty sure I'm falling right off what David Young called the hard work cliff.
It's so easy to do, but it was necessary groundwork, though. We really spent the first two sessions just setting the stage.
Oh, for sure.
Remember session one? It was all about grounding us in the identity of a peacemaker.
The idea that it requires both integrity of heart and skillful hands.
Exactly. From Psalm 78:72, and then that set us up for session two.
Which was the first half of the go conversation from Matthew 18:15. Step one, plan and name the issue. And step two, be curious and listen.
And we spent so much time on listening, the whole peanut butter sandwich exercise.
Right. Stop arguing about the facts, the ingredients, and start listening for the recipe, the values underneath.
But today was the pivot. We moved from just receiving information to actually, you know, sharing our side.
And then knowing when to get help. It
Yeah.
was. It was the heavy lifting, for sure. Getting us ready for the practice scenarios next session.
So let's talk about that hard work, Cliff. After all that effort of planning, of listening, you get to step three, sharing your opinion.
And that's where he said most people just ruin it.
Yeah, they switch from being a curious investigator to being a self-righteous lawyer.
I was nodding along when he brought up the butt sandwich analogy.
Oh, yeah.
You say something nice, you're so good at this, and then you hit them with the word but. And it just negates everything that came before it.
It's the instant destruction of any trust you've built. David quoted Proverbs 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath.
But a harsh word stirs up anger. It's like throwing gasoline on the fire if you don't keep that same curious spirit you had when you were listening.
And he gave those three rules for sharing.
The non-negotiables. First, restate what you heard that was important for them, not for you.
Then empathize with how they feel from their point of view.
But that third one, that's the tough one. Watching your tone and your attitude. It takes so much self-control.
Which is why he brought up the Home Depot Bible analogy.
That one really stuck with me.
Yeah.
It's not just that it takes time, it's that if you rush a complicated recurring conflict, you're basically acting like a total beginner.
Right. You're the person trying to assemble some complex thing in 15 minutes when the instructions say it takes 4 hours. David's point was that feeling of
The
tediousness.
repetition of restating and empathizing.
That is the cost of mastery. You have to feel it to get good at it.
And that need for a measured tone came through so clearly in the nice jacket demonstration he did with John. Just two words, nice jacket. But he could make it a compliment or a question or a judgment just with his inflection.
And kids pick up on that. They might not have the words for it, but they know when there's funkiness in the air. They sense the tone.
And that's the hinge, right? That leads directly into what, for me, was the most critical part of the whole session.
The right conversation versus the wrong conversation.
Yes, this is where it gets really, really practical.
The right conversation has to focus only on one thing, what they did.
Objective,
Yeah.
provable, things you can't really argue with.
Their behavior, their words, their actions, the impact of those actions, observable patterns.
And the second you cross that line, you're in the wrong conversation.
Which is all about who they are.
Assumptions, guessing at motives, labeling them.
It's the difference between saying, I think you're lazy, which is a judgment they can just deny.
Versus saying, hey, we agreed to meet at 10 and you showed up at 10:45 and I've noticed that's happened four or five times.
You can't argue with your arrival time, but you can absolutely argue with the label lazy, and then the whole conversation is derailed.
And that objectivity is what you need to manage what he called the conversation temperature.
Right, you have to stay in that green zone to do any real problem solving. That's where your critical thinking lives.
But the second it gets emotional, the temperature spikes. You're either in the hot zone,
Aggression, raised voices, fight mode.
or you drop into the cold zone, withdrawal, sarcasm.
Sure, you're always right. The freeze response.
I mean, either of those zones, you're just operating from your lower brain. Critical thinking is gone.
The goal then is to use emotional intelligence, or EI, to stay warm, or to bring the temperature back down, to check in, validate feelings, make it safe again.
That's why we see those famous unplanned failures everywhere. He used the example of the road rage soccer mom chasing the pickup truck.
Yeah.
In her head, she's protecting her kids, but she's operating from pure emotion, endangering everyone. It's just reactive chaos.
It's the same thing sales tactics target, lowering the speed bump of critical thinking.
The impulse buys at the checkout, the Mustang ad that sells a feeling, not a practical vehicle.
When our EI disappears, that critical speed bump is gone, and we do or say things we almost always regret.
He mentioned the book The Emotional Intelligence of Jesus, saying that Jesus modeled this stuff long before it had a psychological term.
Which makes sense. So, okay, what happens when you do everything right? You manage the temperature, you have the right conversation, and the other person still won't engage.
When do you stop trying to fix it yourself?
And that's the escape hatch.
Yeah.
Step 5, go get help. Because there's a scriptural limit to what we can do.
Romans 12:18. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone.
As far as it depends on you. That's the key phrase. It takes two.
And you can't make peace with someone who refuses to. Or worse, someone who is toxic.
Which is when we have to recognize what he called high conflict patterns, or HCPs.
The first one was DARVO. Deny, attack, and reverse victim and offender.
It is terrifyingly effective.
You bring up the fact that they were late and they immediately flip it. I wasn't late. Why are you so obsessed with time? You just don't like me because I'm Canadian.
Right. And suddenly you're defending yourself against being prejudiced, and the original issue is completely gone. It's gaslighting, basically.
And the other one was the defensive posture. Deny, minimize, what's the big deal, and blame, you make me crazy.
When you see those patterns, you know you're not in a productive conversation anymore.
And that led to the difference between a difficult person, which we all are sometimes, and a truly toxic person.
The trail of bodies.
Exactly. A toxic person treats everyone this way. It's a consistent pattern, and they leave a wake of broken relationships behind them.
And that's when you have to know when to go get help. A facilitated discussion becomes necessary when you've tried and failed, when you're just stuck in the hot or cold zones.
Or when one person can't even articulate what's wrong, like the example of screaming, "The chicken is ready to eat," when the real issue is feeling unappreciated. Not the temperature of the chicken.
And if even that fails, you get to the last option, stage 6, changing the relationship. That was the heaviest part for me.
That sometimes, for the good of the kingdom, a relationship has to change. Or even end.
Like Paul and Barnabas separating. It's a hard truth, especially for Christians who value unity so highly.
And David said, we can't let our pride make us think we can fix someone Jesus himself would have walked away from.
Which is why he recommended that book, When to Walk Away by Gary Thomas. It's so countercultural, but sometimes staying in a toxic dynamic does more harm than good.
So, assuming we're not in a toxic situation and the conflict is resolvable, that brings us to the final piece. Step 4, resolve the issue.
And the cost. He brought up 2 Corinthians 5:18-19. Reconciliation cost God the life of his son.
So it's going to cost us something too. Effort. Sacrifice.
Which he framed in the own offer needs model. An actual apology, not just a flippant my bad.
First, you have to own your part. Specifically. Not I'm sorry if you felt hurt, but I own that I was late 4 times and I know that broke our trust.
Second, you offer to make it right. You proactively suggest a solution.
But the third step. That's the one I think almost everyone misses.
The need step.
Asking the question, what else do you need for me to make this right? Because we always assume we know what they need.
We rush to offer a solution from our own perspective.
But that mediation story he told, it just shows how wrong our assumptions can be.
The father who broke the young man's jaw, thinking he was a predator.
And when it came time for reconciliation, the young man didn't ask for money. He didn't ask for anything you'd expect.
He asked the father to spend 2 hours every Sunday talking to his own daughter.
Because the real issue wasn't the jaw. It was the father's broken relationship with his daughter that caused the whole thing. The need was something no one could have predicted.
It's an incredible story. And the perfect scriptural model for all of this is Zacchaeus.
In Luke 19, he took ownership by climbing that tree, giving up his dignity, and inviting Jesus to his house.
He made an offer giving half his possessions to the poor.
But then he addressed the needs. He said he would pay back 4 times the amount to anyone he had cheated. He let the victims define what was required.
He didn't decide what was fair. He let them. That is an impossibly high standard for us.
It really is. So we've gone from identity to planning and listening, and now to sharing, dealing with toxicity, and finally, reconciliation.
And next session is where the rubber meets the road. The everyday conflict practice scenarios.
I'm really curious to see how quickly I fall back into my old habits when we start role-playing. But before we wrap up, David left us with those two small steps.
Take a small step to reconcile with one person using this process, and write a personal commitment to being an everyday peacemaker.
That's the challenge, and it builds on that whole own offer needs thing. We're so quick to offer a solution to the surface-level fight,
without ever understanding the core pain that's driving it.
So maybe that's the final thought for you to process from this deep dive. When conflict comes up, what specific unasked need is driving the other person's anger or their defensiveness? And are you brave enough to just ask them directly what it is, even if you have no idea what the answer will be?